Okay, we're rolling.
Wow. That's the quickest Matt enters the door to recording that has been in a while. Probably because Matt was about 10 minutes late. would you like to finish your breakfast pizza before we get started?
Sorry, it's one of those crispy crust ones, so I knew it would be loud. I'll cover my mic.
Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
I'm Richard.
I guess I could have timed that better.
Sorry.
That's Richard eating pizza. We talk about things mostly in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVDs.
Video games.
And then where tech intersects those areas. Which today is going to be a tech-heavy episode.
Sweet.
But first, let's get to the movies. In kind of random order, I saw Idiocracy.
Oh yeah?
On Friday night.
I've been wanting to see it. You got the DVD or you saw it?
I was over at a friend's house and we were just going to see something and he's been wanting to see it.
What'd you think of it?
I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised.
I've heard really good reviews.
I really didn't know what to expect going in because this is Mike Judge's second film. I don't know if he did another one before Office Space that was under the rather.
Well, I mean, of course he did Beavis and Butthead Do America, but his second live action.
Oh, that's a good point. So yeah, Mike Judge, who did Beavis and Butthead, who does King of the Hill, and who did Office Space, made a film called Idiocracy with Luke Wilson, which we've talked about in the past, but as a refresher course, and it essentially was released in like 8 theaters, some ridiculously small amount of theaters.
Clearly a contractual, we've released the film, otherwise we owe you a bunch of money kind of thing.
And I don't clearly I can speculate as to why it wasn't released, but as you look at it, they clearly spent some money to make it. It's not like it's cardboard sets.
I heard there's pretty good effects and everything in it too.
Yeah, they're not ILM quality. But
clearly money behind them.
Yeah, you don't look at it and think that's direct-to-video. And it was, I don't think it was as good as Office Space, but it was a good film. I don't feel like I wasted my time. I feel like I was entertained.
Well, the weird thing about it is that Mike Judge doesn't really do much in the way of interviews ever. And I never have heard him say word one about Idiocracy. When it was first released, you heard tons of people going, there's a Mike Judge film out.
Right.
They've been working on this. And it's only out in these little theaters in America. And there was a lot of press about why are they burying this movie at the time. And then when it comes out in DVD, he's not promoting it. But there's all these other people, these Mike Judge fanatics, who are pushing it, talking about it. But Mike Judge, either he just doesn't talk, and that's Mike Judge, or he was like contractually told not to talk, sort of like Paul Schrader when they did that first Exorcist prequel that they ended up, getting rid of all the footage. And then later when they decided to release it, he was allowed to talk about it.
The plot of the film is that Luke Wilson, who works for the Army, along with Maya Rudolph, are frozen for 500 years in an Army experiment that's forgotten about. And they wake up and Luke Wilson, who's very average, suddenly is the smartest guy in the world, or at least in the country, because as 500 years has gone by, the smart people didn't breed as much as the stupid people.
Yeah.
And there's a hysterical bit in the front which sets that premise up. And so everyone that's left is incredibly stupid. The number one TV show is Ow My Balls, which is a guy getting hit in the balls over and over and over. And there's plenty of examples of how society has devolved.
I'd watch that.
And there are some corporations that are mentioned, like Starbucks and Costco and... And you wonder, did the studio think that they would offend either the corporations or that they would offend normal people, that normal people would think that they're being targeted? But you look at Borat, and that's clearly targeting
typically
sort of
with
the same
movies
thing.
Like that, though, they get clearances from the corporations. Even if they're spoofing them, they get clearances. So they ahead of time, they go out, they talk with them, they get us, just even mention them. Even though legally they don't necessarily have to.
Yeah, because I asked, I'm like, how did the corporations had to give permission? And someone said, well, it's satire, so they don't.
Well, they're right. They don't have to, but near as I can tell, because I read a couple articles about this, they go into huge lengths these days, just even though they legally have a right, they just want to avoid the... they just want to avoid the lawsuits. Now, there's some movies like documentaries where they will utilize corporations, but for the most part, they get permission even when they're messing with
them.
God,
and it's like there's like Carl's Jr.'s in there, and there's a bit with like a food vending machine, and it's like pushing, would you like big ass fries with that? Would you like big, thank you. Thanks for eating at Carl's Jr. F you, I'm eating. And it's, wow. Either Carl's Jr. is extremely cool for letting that happen, or they weren't asked. Anyway, it's a good film, and it's definitely...
Now, did they show their logos, like the Carl's Jr. logo or anything?
I think it was the Carl's Jr. logo, but with a sad face instead of a happy face.
Oh, well, then...
And the Costco logo was recognizable. It was a little different. I think there was an oval around it.
Because, man, it's... Because using their name is one thing. Using a logo, that's a different thing, and
Starbucks,
you definitely have
that
permission.
There was I don't know if it was the exact Starbucks logo, or if it was a... a variant, but it was you glance at it and you'd instantly think, well, that's the coffee mermaid chick.
Well, I definitely want to see
anyway,
it. I can't wait for it to hit.
If you have the opportunity, don't avoid it because you've never heard of it. That's the lesson there. I also saw Hoodwinked last night.
Oh, is that as bad as it looks?
No.
Was it good?
Not bad. Remember when it came out? It was making a ton of money.
That didn't make any money. That was the one that made. That was the one. That
dude,
was the.
It was in the theaters repeatedly in the top 10.
That was the one that when
I say repeatedly, I mean week after week.
Was it famously in the theaters? That was the one that was the pickup by Harvey Weinstein after they got dumped by Disney, and he went out and bought a bunch of properties to try and it was like the first of. This onslaught of computer animated ones. It wasn't. There was a couple that were really bad, but that one, my recollection was it didn't do that well. I mean, when you compare it to the biggies that do.
No, when you compare it to Cars or, you know, Shrek or something like that. No, I'm sure it didn't. I didn't bother to look up what it
made.
My
recollection, it did like $20 million or something.
Well, they made it for about $2, so anything
is
a ton of money for that film.
That's true.
I mean, the quality of animation it's not Pixar level, it's not DreamWorks level, but it's good enough that it wasn't distracting to me, except the water was really bad.
Really?
But water's really hard and really expensive to do, so I gave them a pass on that. But I thought the story was so clever... That you clear it, you know, it's the age old argument of it doesn't matter how good a film looks. If the story sucks, no one's going to want to watch it.
Exactly.
This is the opposite. The story I thought was very engaging, very entertaining, very fun. And, you know, I gave the animation a pass. The only downside was, you know, they've got a bunch of celebrity voices. And if you're a small film, you'll take any hook you can get to sell the thing. Yep. I get that. So it's a little disappointing that, like, Anne Hathaway is Red Riding Hood. It's like, there's no need for that. You can get a voice actress who specializes in voice acting, as we've said many, many times before.
And that was the thing. This particular movie was, unlike Shrek's and other ones, and especially, like, the Monster Houses, where it's literally in the Beowulf, where they're filming actors, those where they get the actors, they do it, they film it, and then a lot of the animation actually... match it. It goes back and forth between the actors and the animators matching each other. This one here was your classic, just recorded way after the fact kind of thing, because they put those actors together and put them in a, you know, recorded it way after. This was a pickup. It'd be interesting to hear the movie that Harvey Weinstein bought, because that clearly had either no name actors or just maybe a few.
To me, the big one, the one I enjoy listening to the most, is Patrick Warburton.
Yeah, he's got a great voice.
Who has done both. He's done regular acting.
Yep.
You know, he was in Seinfeld as Putty.
He was the tick, right?
The six episodes that lasted. He's been in a couple films. He was in Big Trouble, which I never saw. He's now in that Rules of Engagement show. But he's been voice acting.
Is that still on?
I don't know. He's been voice acting in Family Guy forever. He's been doing other voices, and he's great at it.
Yeah.
He's got a voice I enjoy listening to.
Well, he's got a classic voice, and you can hear him messing with you in his voice, you know, that kind of, he's got a really great quality to it.
It's a sardonic, wry quality.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, one of the storylines of the Hoodwinked is sort of a bit of a Fletch takeoff, which is great because I watched Fletch about 100 times when it came out. I don't know. I thought it was extremely clever, and
cool.
I recommend it.
Check it out.
And it's one of those that it's a family appropriate film that the adults would enjoy. The kids aren't going to get the Fletch references, but I will get the Fletch references.
Cool.
And then I brought back your copy of Singles.
Oh, I didn't even know you borrowed it.
I borrowed it a long time ago. This is, of course, the Cameron Crowe Seattle film. And I hadn't watched it in a while. I watched it frequently and fairly soon after it came out. This is 92.
I remember when it did come out, I remember literally being really excited about this movie coming out because it was Cameron Crowe, and he had directed Say Anything, and he had written Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and here he was about to direct a movie in Seattle. I knew he lived in Seattle, and he was married to Nancy Wilson of Heart, and so I knew that. And this was just at the time when Soundgarden was breaking and Pearl Jam was breaking, everything else. And this movie had them in the movie.
It was just the teeniest bit before all those bands got huge.
Exactly. And I knew I had seen a lot of them because I was like, a bunch of my friends were into that whole scene before it became big. So I had seen Pearl Jam earlier. I hadn't seen Soundgarden at the time, but I knew a little bit about him. So I was like, wow, this can be cool. We actually saw it at opening night at the Oak Tree Cinemas. And I remember liking it, but in retrospect now, it didn't wear as well to me. It didn't seem as great. Although it brings up memories, I literally wore out a cassette tape of that soundtrack.
Oh, God.
Over and over.
Everybody I know has that soundtrack.
Jesus. I mean, and it's like, it's so iconic to me. In fact, I can't even hardly listen to some of these songs in because they're so built into my brainstem.
Exactly.
But I don't know, the movie, I liked it a lot when it came out. I like it less now, it seems. And Cameron Crowe is really, I think, fumbling as a director these days, and you can sort of see his oeuvre where it seemed great at one time, but I wonder what he's going to do next.
No, some of his stuff is very in the moment.
Yeah.
Or of the moment.
Singles, yeah, that's true.
You know, if you think back to Say Anything, that's very of the moment. It dates a little better, but it's very specific to its time. And this is very specific to its time. I moved to Seattle in 94. This film helped motivate me, but it wasn't the only factor.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people, though, saw this in high school and thought, Seattle looks awesome. I want to go be there. So I'm curious to know, you know, how much of this movie is responsible for the influx of people in Seattle.
Is there a commentary track on that thing?
I don't think so.
And
I think partly, I remember seeing a little bit about him wanting to write an article for Rolling Stone about the making of this movie, which I never read. But I remember Campbell Scott had a comment of telling Cameron Crowe, you know, don't whitewash it. Tell them about us arguing, because apparently they didn't get along too well. I don't know what the issue was.
Well, Campbell Scott's like a filmmaker himself, and invariably you hear those. That doesn't work well. I thought it was a great movie when it came out. I saw it recently again, or parts of it. It just seemed kind of dumber.
Some of the dialogue seems a little forced with the Kyra Sedgwick and her best friend.
Yeah.
And some of it's a little off, but I still find it, you know, a pretty... You know, I had forgotten that there were bits where they talked to the camera.
Yeah.
And that kind of, it's like, wow, you don't see that hardly ever in movies.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it works.
You know, have you seen, what is his movie? Vanilla Sky. Have you seen Vanilla Sky?
Yeah, I saw it once.
And did you listen to the commentary track?
No.
I loved Almost Famous, but that movie, which I didn't think was that great. In fact, I thought it was pretty bad. And it was a remake of this Spanish movie that I do have, which I actually really liked. Well, that the commentary track was so annoying for that movie. It was Cameron Crowe and Nancy Wilson, his wife, and she's playing guitar through the commentary a little bit, and then he's talking about little things he put in the movie as little snippets you're not going to get on first glance, but he, and as you started going, I see what he's pointing out, and I'm recognizing, wow, that I know now that he's pointed out to me, I'm seeing it, and wow, it really doesn't work. His commentary track made me think the movie, which I gave like a C minus, like I thought was even worse after I heard the commentary track. And then when Elizabethtown came out, the way they were describing this movie, I could actually picture how the entire movie played out and how little I wanted to see it, and what lingering, like, you know, respect I had for Cameron Crowe, I realized, boy, I just don't want to see this thing at all. I just want to consider an anomaly. I hope his next movie is better, but boy, he just had a couple really crappy movies in a row.
I'm willing to see it, but I'm not going to seek it out.
Yeah.
And then you saw The Last King of Scotland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went and saw that the other day. I was... sorry, it's my washing machine making that noise. Believe it or not, a BBC journalist told me to go see it. So... Were
you unaware of the film before that?
No, I was being interviewed by a BBC journalist about the raid on Entebbe in Uganda in 1975, I think it was. But anyway, 1976. But anyway, so my buddy and I just happened to have some free time, and we went to go see it, and this is one of those movies where they've decided to. And they don't even tell you that in the movie. It's only later I figured out where they decide to tell the story of some bigger than life person through the eyes of a fictional character. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they invent this fictional doctor
right. Who
goes to Uganda. And I didn't realize that going in the beginning. It says this film is based on real people and true events. So you're just assuming it's all true. And it's only at the end of the movie you realize, no, it's a novel. His character is completely contrived. I hate that. I hate that. Just knowing that, I don't like that at all. And Forest Whitaker was great, really good. And I haven't seen many of the other nominated performances, but he was great. I mean, he's just a really great actor, powerful. And the movie is okay for what it is, but just the whole conceit. And to a certain extent, there's been movies like that where they need to tell the story of a African American or a black guy somewhere else in the world through the eyes of a white person. And I'm thinking, boy, in 2007, do we really still need to do that? Couldn't there have been there's clearly individuals within his own cabinet, Idi Amin's own cabinet, that it could have worked with. But anyway, so that kind of frustrated me.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're a filmmaker and you're looking at ways to expand the potential audience.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, what's funny is what's weird is Forest Whitaker is almost a supporting actor in this movie. You only see him when you see this other guy. This other guy is in almost every frame of the movie, yet I never really saw him promoted with the movie. So when you're seeing the movie, and the movie did pretty well, it made $45 million worldwide for a movie that clearly cost $5 million. So it did really well, and they never even promoted this Scottish dude who is really the star of the movie.
I saw some stuff.
Yeah.
It was overshadowed by the other stuff, but yeah. I was aware, you know, I knew he was Scottish, so I must have seen something.
Well, The Last King of Scotland is a reference Idi Amin called himself.
Right.
He was fascinated by Scottish culture. And
I'm blanking on the other actor's name.
James McAvoy is the guy in the movie.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
I knew it was James, but that
and
I
Kerry
see.
Washington's in it. She's
who's that?
She's an actress. She's in that movie, that Chris Rock movie, I Think I Love My Wife.
And is she the wife?
She's one of Edie. She's I think the person.
No, I mean in the Chris Rock movie.
I think
she's the wife.
She's either the wife or the one that
I
he's
think
in
Gina
love
Torres
with.
Is the other
yeah.
one.
So and then she's the one. And in this movie, there's like a nice 30-second shot lingering on her ass, which was kind of nice.
Well, that's fantastic.
But other than that, it was a pretty good movie. And what the best part about the movie, I thought, in addition to some great acting, was a really excellent sense of place. I mean, they filmed it in Uganda. Apparently the first movie in over 50 years they filmed in Uganda.
Wow.
So it's like The African Queen with Humphrey Bogart.
That's
so they got permission to film in the original palaces stuff. So it really felt like, you know, mid-70s, you know, African dictator.
That's really
Africa.
Cool.
It was pretty cool. But parts of it. I mean, just the overall feeling, a little like I've been duped kind of feeling at the end, knowing it wasn't there. That kind of threw me.
So there's a ton of random movie news, but I didn't write hardly any of it down.
Yeah.
Just because none of it seemed really worth talking about.
Yeah.
You know, there's bits about... one thing I did write down, there's talk of a fourth Bourne film, Bourne Ultimatum.
Yep.
And how it... It would give Matt Damon like $20 million plus profit participation and just basically, we want to keep milking this for all it's worth, Maddie. What's it going to take?
Yeah. So he had signed up for three or something? Or
I think. And he had said, you know, three is probably the right number.
Yeah.
You know, and as long, the second one was fantastic. I have high hopes for the third because it's still
did
a
you
Paul
see the,
Greengrass.
Did you see for it?
I don't know.
They had some little teaser trailer and they're making a big deal out of it. You watch the teaser trailer and you quickly realize that it's 98% clips from previous Bourne films and then just a couple little snippets of the new one. Which I'm surprised because the new movie's coming out pretty soon. I'm surprised they didn't have more to throw in there.
You know, I will certainly give it the benefit of the doubt, but I got to thinking, if the point of this character is he wants to be left alone,
yeah,
and you keep putting him in situations where he's not left alone, that premise gets thin.
That's a really good point.
And it's fine. I've bought it, and you know, the first one is fine. I bought the thing in the second one where there was, I felt, a valid reason to be poking him with a sharp stick.
Well, the teaser of the third one is, they keep emphasizing he's out for vengeance. He's going after, they're implying he's going after the Joan Allen character from the last one. It's pretty clear that the Julia Stiles character is a bigger part of this one.
And I've heard also that maybe she's a love interest.
Well, you get that impression that she's definitely a bigger character, and they sort of they connected, and he took her in the last one, and I don't know. I'm extremely excited about the next one. That said, I agree with you that it can get really old, and they kept talking about how, well, this is the modern version of Bond and this whatever, and actually, you make the best point of all. Bond can keep going on forever and ever, but Jason Bourne literally can't. You can't just keep doing this
without shifting his raison d'etre.
Exactly, completely. And I'm not sure. I mean, I guess you could do that and do it effectively, or he just decides to make peace with himself and hire himself out as a mercenary spy or something.
You know, I'll give good writing the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
So is that little bit? You know, I saw that Sony apparently already claimed in theater date for Spider-Man 4, which is, you know, and they're, as this one
and they don't
comes
even
out,
have an actor yet for it.
As this one comes out, a lot of people are bouncing. A lot of the actors are saying, and I think Toby finally said, no, this is it. I'm done.
Yeah.
Toby Maguire. And a lot of them were kind of hedging their bets saying, well, if Sam Raimi wants to do it, I'll think about it. If Sam Raimi doesn't do it, then no. And I don't think Sam Raimi said one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me, if I was Sam Raimi and I'd basically done nothing but make Spider-Man movies back to back for years and years and years,
I'd be tired of it.
They would have to back the biggest dump truck full of cash up to my house because you're right. I would want a break. I would just want to do nothing for a while or do something that's not a Spider-Man film. No matter how much you love the character, no matter how much you love the actors, you need to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's clearly a talented director. He's got a lot different stuff floating around in him. So, yeah, I agree.
Is there anything else movie related you wanted to touch on?
I can't think of a thing.
I asked John. I just assumed that he would see Shooter, and he did. And I said, you know, what did you think it looked like every action movie like ever rolled into one? It's the Bourne Identity. It's Bond. It's Mistaken Identity. It's, you know, don't cross the, you know, it's Rambo.
It's Manchurian Canada a little bit. It's,
you know, don't. Whole... And so, and he said, the performances were great. And actually I heard Kenneth Turan on NPR saying that Mark Wahlberg was excellent.
Yeah, it's funny how he's morphed into this really great actor.
And that's pretty much all Kenneth Turan talked about. But John said it was too violent.
Wow.
Every time someone got shot, it's like their head exploded or... You know,
well, they're using 50 caliber bullets. What else is going to
happen? That was kind of a weird reaction because John usually is okay with action movies and doesn't comment along those lines. And for John to say, for that to be his negative reaction was like, wow, okay.
Wow.
So that took me back. So it's one of those, I'll see it if I don't have to expend any effort to see it.
But well, I'll probably, when it comes on DVD, I'll see. I like Mark Wahlberg, so
yeah.
It comes on DVD and I see it for the four for $20 at Blockbuster, I will definitely pick it up, especially if it has a commentary track. I did like, wasn't that Antoine Fuqua that did this one?
Yes.
So, and I liked Training Day a lot. So I hated Tears of the Sun. I can't remember the second one he did, but I liked Training
Day
a lot. That
was that Bruce Willis one.
Yeah, I remember.
I didn't hate that.
I didn't hate it either, but I guess I said I hated it, but I guess it just seemed really lame.
Yeah, it's
lame,
forgettable.
But, yeah, totally.
Did you ever see, oh God, what was that? The F-18 with Owen.
Oh, yeah, the one where they, in Bosnia, the one where he's running.
All I can think of is the Butterscotch Stallion. What's his name?
The Butterscotch, Owen Wilson. Yeah, but
and
it was,
Hansel. What the hell is his name?
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's with it's the horrible movie where he's trapped
in
Bosnia. And he's
with
running,
Gene
and he has
Hackman.
To sing the song, and Gene Hackman. Oh, God, that was terrible.
It was, actually, I didn't think it was that bad, but what sticks out to me is that, like, I think that was the one with Tom Skerritt was the carrier commander.
Oh, I don't remember.
No, Tom Skerritt was in the Tears of the Sun.
And he's in Top Gun too.
Yeah, I know that. Okay. But he was good in Top Gun. Yeah. And you're right. In Tears of the Sun, he's like the commander of this carrier, but only time you see him is on the deck of the carrier with like a satellite phone.
Meaning they filmed him like in one day.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They had permission for one day to be on the carrier deck or just enough time. And you only see him on the deck and it sticks out as so bad.
Yeah.
Just that particular fact was, oh, come on. The captain is not on the deck that many times. That's retarded. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so there's a lot of tech stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. Let's do video games first.
Okay.
Grand Theft Auto 4 trailer has been released, and we actually got an email about this.
Good. I loved it.
I didn't see the trailer.
I got extremely excited. Well, first off, it's funny.
You're into the Grand Theft Auto games.
Oh, am I? Watching the trailer, I thought it was really interesting, because first of all, immediately I started seeing people go, oh my God, it's about a Russian guy that starts this gang. Cause you know, in the past Italian American punk, Tommy Vercetti, I think, that was the Miami one. And then there was this African American dude in the most recent one. And this one, it's going to be about the Russian mob. And I'm thinking, you don't know that. They could release five different trailers where it's telling the story of totally different ones. But Liberty City this time it's clearly New York, and they're filming, and you can see the Empire State Building and other stuff. I thought it was cute. They had the MetLife Building, and nobody's mentioned the MetLife Building, says the company that changed it to Get a Life. But anyway, so it was clearly very rich and detailed, and all I could do is just get extremely excited, because I know how much I enjoyed those games and how much far beyond the typical gaming experiences they've been. And the one thing I liked about this was, whether people admit it or not, Grand Theft Auto's graphics have always been B- at average compared to what else was going on at the time. And this one here looks like pretty close to being the best of next gen graphics. I mean, it looks really good. And they claim that they took the graphics straight off a next gen console, which means Xbox. And and they just look great. I am freaking excited.
I cannot remember. Is that exclusive to the Xbox?
I don't think so, but they're still hemming and hawing. They haven't said anything about PlayStation, but the fact is PlayStation made Grand Theft Auto. That's where they sold all their, so it's hard to imagine them abandoning the next console.
While that's true, Microsoft loves to back a Brinks truck full of cash up to someone's door and say, hey, how about this for an idea?
Yeah.
You know, that happened with Bungie. Bungie was an independent studio, famously making Halo for the Mac.
Yep.
And it was going to look fantastic on the Mac. Yep. And all of a sudden, Microsoft backs a dump truck full of cash up to the door and says, hey, how about you make it for our little console instead?
Yeah.
And suddenly, it's not available for the Mac for like 4 years later. So,
I noticed that that New York City, and I think Bloomberg in particular, is ticked that they're using in their video game New York City as a backdrop, you know, fictional New York City.
Give it they're a
and I'm
rest.
I'm going, you're insane. This is insane. They weren't ticked, you know, that the Godfather used it or that French Connection or whatever. This is insanity that anybody even asked
them.
It's
the most
this.
Important city in the country. One in every 12 Americans lives in New York City.
Yeah.
That's or in the surrounding you area. Hear how big it is and you hear the population, but that is the number that reaches me. 1 in 12 Americans lives in New York.
That's well, amazing. I noticed that Las Vegas, I think the Mayor Goodman over there was ticked off that Rainbow Six Las Vegas was filmed there with all this violence. I'm thinking, are you guys high? Nuts? It's a video game. It's cool. It's like, what are you insane? It's insane. And the one thing nobody really, despite what everybody's saying, nobody knows anything about Vegas. Cause that was the thing about San Andreas is you start out in this big, rich city playing around. And then, which is basically Los Angeles, South Central Los Angeles and downtown Los Angeles. And before you know it, actually, wow, you're being able to move on to this other city that's clearly San Francisco. It's called San Fierro in the movie or in the game. And then when everything's said and done, then you go on to another section that's basically Las Vegas, and you realize how enormous the world is. And that's what I'm wondering about this one, because the last one was, it was so enormous that most games you can play through in about 10 to 20 hours. And that game, you really, if you were an average player, it's going to take you 50 hours to get through. And I shudder to, and that's not like being an achievement whore or anything else. That's just playing through the thing. And I wonder about this particular game, how big they're going to make it. Cause I honestly think the last one was the perfect bigness. Any bigger, it would just be ridiculously big. But anyway,
yeah,
I'm extremely excited. I've never actually been more excited about a video game.
I guess I should look at the trailer, but to me, I can't get past the stereotype and the somewhat validity of shooting cops and killing hookers.
Well, you know,
I just have no interest in that.
What's weird is you say that, but there's like, I've never killed a hooker in that game ever. I joke about it because I guess you can, just like you can kill a pedestrian, but it just, there's no real point to it. There's no real, I mean, it's a mission-based game basically, and it's a sandbox thing, but it's a mission-based game, and killing cops, it's like, well, I mean, if you're being chased and they're the enemy in the game in certain segments, but not always. It's usually other bad guys. There's no huge impetus to kill cops. In fact, you can play that whole game without killing anybody in some senses. It's just
okay. But that, to me, that's a stereotype.
Well, it's a stereotype, but man, you should consider playing it, man.
I kind of doubt I'll have the time, only because the fall is, you know, God willing, going to have Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
Which in and of itself isn't that big a deal, because it's got four things in it or whatever, five things in it. I'll probably, you know, that's going to be a time vacuum.
Well, Half-Life 2 is the greatest game I've ever played.
Halo in the fall.
Yeah.
In fact, there's some talk that it'll be out in September.
Really? I hadn't heard that.
To get a jump on the holiday sales.
I am probably going to get the Half-Life 2 little packs myself, just because I so truly enjoyed Halo 2 the first time I played, or not Halo, I'm sorry, Half-Life 2. I so truly enjoyed it that I'm thinking about playing through the damn thing again, and which I've never done before. And plus, you know, it's got the new expansion packs, and kind of I've morphed off of computer games and onto video games. Well, and since I'm doing that, I might as well get used to it.
And Forza is going to be out in May.
No interest.
I know.
2 months from now, about a month.
But Grand Theft Auto is a fall game, isn't it?
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto is supposed to come out on November. They put a date now. It's like November 20th or something.
Unless I suddenly am great time, I don't see that one barging its way in. All right. So Microsoft last week, Xbox 360 Elite.
Yeah.
Are you aware of all of that?
Of course I am.
Of course. Well, sometimes you're busy at work and you don't. But so basically, it's a third SKU.
Mm-hmm.
It's a third unit. It's black, which to me does nothing.
SKU meaning that it's an actual product.
It doesn't replace anything.
Yeah,
it's just an additional,
and it's not a specialty, you know, short term
right.
Goofball thing.
Given the choice, I would take the white one over the black one, because I just think the white one looks cooler. Now, I understand if you have a rack of entertainment stuff that's all black, it can stick out. But
yeah, but it never, I mean, look at mine. It's never going to look in, it's always going to look off in wherever you put it anyway.
Not only that, it's going to collect dust like a sumbitch.
Yeah.
And I never dust. But to me, the white one just looks better.
Okay, so what makes it? It's got a 120 gig hard drive.
So it's black, and then there's two, maybe 2.5 other things. It comes with a bigger hard drive, which was also announced, 120 gigabytes versus the existing 20 gigabytes.
And the reason this is important is because they're positioning this as a home entertainment with the live thing, similar to Apple TV. You can download and purchase stuff.
Well, so far they haven't marketed it in that manner.
But that's clearly why.
No, you're right. The only reason that the hard drive is bigger is to take advantage is to recognize the fact that all of their video downloads need space.
Yeah.
And that even though, and here at Microsoft had a great thing where if you buy a show, you can delete it off the hard drive and then re-download it again if you want to watch it again without paying twice. You only need to pay once. And their
which is awesome.
Yeah, that is brilliant.
But I wish Apple would do that.
I concur. But a lot of people want to see stuff now, and 20 gigs just doesn't let you store hardly anything.
No, when I've done it, I've already had to, like, I bought a couple of high def versions of CSI, and then like I had like a bunch of game data stored, and then I was out of space on my little 20 gig puny hard drive. So I mean it would have helped me too.
So $180.
Okay, so the 120 gig hard drive, what's the other thing? There's the new wireless controllers that are black.
Well, yeah, the main accessories are now black.
Yep.
The other big deal is HDMI.
Yep.
This now has a built-in HDMI port, and it comes with a cable, which is cool because cables can be expensive if you purchase them separately. And Sony's PlayStation 3 does not come with any high def cables.
Yeah.
They would like you to buy those separately. And I can see if you buy a PS3 and you're not with it and you get home and you realize you got to go buy a cable, I'm pissed.
Yeah, I hear you.
Granted,
especially when you've spent $600 on the thing.
Exactly.
And then another $70 for a game, and then they say, "You mean after all this I have to drive back and buy a freaking cable?"
And Microsoft the 360 came with high def component cables. Their cable octopus had both regular def and high def built in, which was a great idea. They didn't make you go and buy a second cable.
Yeah.
So anyway, HDMI, which is great, but suddenly you realize,
if you listen to Major Nelson, he says, "I'm glad we're putting this on here," but he's been drumming that beat for so long that, you know, it's got component, and component is the same that we've always had when we've had on our computers. It's an analog signal, but it's basically a digital signal.
Okay, there's multiple issues going on with this. The first thing that comes to my mind as an existing Xbox 360 owner is, well, great, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
Because HDMI does the 1080p signal, outputs the 1080p signal, and my TV only accepts 1080p through HDMI.
Okay.
So the only way I'm going to get HDMI from the Xbox to my TV is through the HDMI cable.
Why doesn't it accept it through a component? Is it a tech? Is it a?
That's how Sony built them. I have a Sony TV.
Because it can't. Because like I have this video projector and it definitely runs 1080p through those analog signals or those components.
Are you sure it's the components? Because
let's put it this way: I set it up and I set up my my thing to say 1080p and it plays. So as near as I can tell, it's playing at 1080p. I mean it should be screwed up if it doesn't work, shouldn't it?
You'd think I'd have to, and
it looks stunning. It looks, you know, stunning.
I'd have to think that through only because there's been one of the movie companies don't want that to happen because then they want the 1080p signal controlled digitally so that in theory they can flag stuff, and if it's copied or illegitimate, it won't play.
Maybe I'm wrong on that then.
But I, God, this is the problem with tech.
Because on a practical level, there's, I mean, we've always, our computers have had, you know, 1900 by 1200 and it's using a VGA port, which is a component signal. So we've always had it. There's no technical reason why it can't happen.
Yeah, I can't,
I can only think the reason Sony did is because they also own movie studios. And once again, Sony's, you know, digital rights portion of their company is dictating their technical portion.
God awful mistake. So it's entirely possible that you can get that signal through your components on your projector. I can't on my TV.
Yeah.
As Microsoft says, well, you can get 1080p through the VGA port. Well, my TV doesn't accept a 1080p signal through its VGA port. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's a limitation of the TV. And I knew that when I bought it, but I assumed that if Xbox advanced to 1080p, that they would have an adapter cable.
Yeah.
But
so what they're saying, it's not an adapter cable. It's you can only get it with this Elite. Down to GameStop, trade it in and buy another one or something.
If I want that. I just assumed that they'd come up with a new adapter cable that plugged into the proprietary Xbox video out and just have an HDMI dongle on it. But apparently, there's like a hardware change inside the board.
Oh, man.
So that's not possible. That there was a rumor on Engadget last week that they were coming out with a cable, and then somebody else said, no, it's a hardware thing. They're not going to do it. So I'm left thinking, well, great. Because I don't want to spend $500 on an Elite just so I can get this.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, now the HD DVD player is dead to me. I can't get that signal to my TV.
Without the
HDMI.
Yeah.
So there's no point in that. That's frustrating.
Yeah, that sucks.
I mean, and it's not entirely Microsoft's fault. It's also Sony's fault and my fault for buying a TV that had that limitation.
Yeah, it's a great TV.
But at the same time, it's like, God dang it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I bought the TV because I love the picture and so many other things about it, and now I'm being punished because Sony didn't choose to support VGA enough.
Yeah.
Anyway,
speaking of Sony, you heard about how badly they've screwed up the launch of PS3 in Europe.
How so? I saw some stories about it, but
you never know who's putting these stories out. But stories about how they set up these all night things and everything else, and nobody showed up. There's cities like where they decided we're going to release like 1,000 of these units, and they sold like 200 of them. And one city where they literally were handing out your big screen TV, your high def TV to every PlayStation purchaser.
I heard there were some deals with Bravia flat panels.
Yeah, maybe that was it, where they were literally giving a bunch out. But there was tons of areas like in Cologne and everywhere else where they specifically released a bunch to these areas, and they were going to have a big thing. And they're like two-thirds of them didn't even get sold.
See, I didn't hear that. I had heard something along the lines of they were selling very well, and they might as well take them off the American shelves where they're just sitting there peacefully and ship them over to Europe where they're doing well. So I had heard the opposite, but it was all anecdotal. So
I think it's all anecdotal. Every time you read anything like that, somebody's got an agenda behind what news they're pumping out.
The only stuff I had seen really concerning that launch was the marketing stuff that the Xbox 360 guys were doing, where they sent an Xbox 360 plus about 4 or 5 feet worth of beer to a game reviewing magazine over there saying, you know, you can get a PS3 or you can get an Xbox 360 for the same price plus
this much beer.
And it's like, you know, flats of beer where it's Costco cases of 24 cans of flat up 5 feet high of Foster's, which do Europeans drink Foster's? Because my understanding is that Australians hate it.
Yeah, they don't. They think of it like as Schlitz or Mickey's or something.
Or PBR.
Our Australian friends used to say it's, you know, they have those ads, Foster's, Australian for beer. And they go, it's Mark, Australian for PISS, mate. Because that's what Australians, they think of as a joke.
And the other thing was that on one of the launch events, the 360 guys basically bought a boat and decked it out, or a barge or something, and it was like 360 hearts you, and and we're floating it down right in front of this event, all illuminated
cute.
And
cute.
It was just very, to some degree, juvenile, but also fun.
Cute.
So that's the deal with the 360 Elite. You know, I would be much, much more happy, much happier. I'd be much happier if they
much
released...
Much more happier.
Yes, if they released a cable so that existing 360 owners can get HDMI.
I agree.
Because I feel like when you start adding new hardware into your console, you're defeating the purpose of the console.
D'accord, mon ami.
You know, if I buy a first generation unit, I don't want the third generation unit to be better. I don't want it to...
Well, it's just weird. This is the first time... I mean, we're getting to the point where in the past, there was no differences. There was the unit, and then you created another unit.
And now
what they're doing is they're upgrading them with significant upgrades halfway through the production cycle.
And to me, that's one of the reasons I'm not a PC gamer. I don't want to have to buy a friggin' graphics card every year.
Well, the thing about most PC games that I've played is... they downgrade pretty well, so you're still able to play them. But
yeah, but I wouldn't want to do that. Yeah, I don't want to down. I want the best available.
Yeah, and no, I hear you.
When I get a console, I know that I'm getting the exact same game experience as you, no matter when you bought your 360.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now, on the Major Nelson podcast where they talk about the 360, Larry brings it up with Arthur. I don't know if he was the product manager of the 360 or not, but they're talking about this, and the guy says, we've got this capability and we want to build it in, and it's not really screwing the early adopters because they can get the same functionality through the VGA port. So I kind of see their argument,
I'll tell you right now, what really sucks is they had a previous podcast, which I believed, and you're telling me is incorrect and you have proof. They said, everybody's saying HDMI. Well, we went to Best Buy. We looked on the back of every one of these things, and they had VGA or they had component ports. So in other words, you can do this. What they didn't realize or recognize is that a lot of these TVs like yours will not accept that full signal in those ports. So they're sitting there saying, hey, as long as it's got component ports, it's going to work. And you're saying, hey, my TV will not officially accept that. And so I think that they were misguided. They went down in an ad hoc way, drove down to Kirkland Best Buy and looked over all of them.
Okay, there is no
wherever,
Kirkland Best Buy.
Or Redmond Best Buy.
No, there's no Redmond Best Buy.
Okay, Overlake
Bellevue
Best Buy.
It's not an Overlake.
They're opening one right next to where I work in Smoky Point. They're everywhere these days.
No, I'm sure it's the Bellevue store that they went to.
And then they flipped them around the back and looked at everyone and saw that and said, great, they can all take the 1080p signal. And that was incorrect.
But if it's 90% of the TVs that can do it.
Yeah, but they said it was 100%.
No, well.
They did. They said that every TV we looked at, and
they said had a VGA port.
Yeah,
what they didn't do was check the officially supported specs, and that's the deal. My understanding is that it's some of Sony's TVs don't do it. Just about everyone else's does.
Yep.
So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that 90% of the market, or 90% of the products is good enough.
Yeah.
If reaching that last 10% costs, 50% more money, I understand the business case for not doing it. But as an owner who gets screwed, it's frustrating. That being said, I understand the gaming experience won't be significantly different because the games, are primarily built to run at 720p.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even right now, if I had the 1080p connection, the games are going to look almost identical.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I totally get that.
Are they making 1080p games?
I don't think so.
Could they handle that?
They've had a couple of Major Nelson podcasts where they really try and explain the difference between how you split your processing power between basically frames per second or like polygon count.
Yeah.
And you can choose one or the other based on the way the hardware supports it.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't support doing both fully 1080p.
Yeah.
There are choices you can make as a game designer that influence that. But either way you go, it's still going to look only a little bit better than the 720p.
Yeah. Because of the choices.
And I'm basing that on what they said in the Major Nelson podcast. Yeah.
No, I trust
what they say. But that being said, the HD DVD drive, which is 1080p and will look, significantly better if through a 1080p signal, is now dead to me.
Yeah.
It's dead to me.
To be a little dramatic about it. But I was really wanting one of those. Really wanted, because I'm a movie dork. I've got a 1080p TV. I want to see movies in 1080p.
I did too. I just started running out of money. And so my next expense will almost certainly be an Apple TV thing.
Which we're going to talk about soon. But anyway, so that's really frustrating that I spent all this money and I'm still screwed out of doing it that way. Now, I can still get, you know, an HD DVD player that has an HDMI cable.
Yeah.
But right now, those are not affordable.
Yeah, they're like $1,000 or $800 or something ridiculous.
All right, so enough of that. Let's move on to Apple TV, since you did bring it up. Apple TV, which does have an HDMI port and an HDMI cable. Thank you, Apple.
But it also has component out, right?
Yes, it has component
that's
out.
That's what I need. I don't have an HDMI.
However, okay, so Apple TV released last week, the end of the week before, so... You know, MacBreak and Twit and all that family of podcasts are all talking about it. Yep. And it's great because by listening to that, I learned that the Apple TV does not support surround sound.
Really?
Which you kind of want to check that yourself because that seems like such a glaring omission.
I wonder if that's because they haven't... I wonder if that's because because of it's like a licensing issue with Dolby.
I don't know.
Because as near as I can tell, surround sound is, it's not sending five distinct channels. It's sending discrete signal information that's broken up through processing. So it seems to me that it should, if it can get Dolby processing, it should be able to do it.
Well, there's two. I mean, Apple TV is very exciting. And on one hand, I really want one. On the other hand, I now think I'm going to wait until two things happen. One, I verify or they include surround sound, because to me, I've got a surround sound setup 5.1.
Yep, same here.
I need that. That's just critical.
Ow. Yep.
The other thing is that iTunes three things. iTunes content is not high def. It's or not 1080p.
Yeah, no, it's not that, but it is.
They do have some 720. I don't know if their movies are 720p or 480p.
I don't know.
Their TV shows, I believe, are 480p, but I'm not positive. They may even be 480i, which is standard def.
No, I think they bumped it up, at least on some of them. Or I may be mistaken on that. I don't know.
I think they're 480p, but I'm not positive. Yeah. I think when they did the last iTunes, they bumped that. Yeah. But, and right now, you can only get... Apple TV only works for iTunes content. So you have to have... quote unquote, bought the video, the TV show through iTunes or the movie through iTunes. That being said,
there's a
hack within 24 hours gets it to play Xvid
and
DVD
and AVI and all the other things. Yeah, that
I haven't investigated that hack. I don't know how much effort it takes or if it breaks anything or.
Well, I was reading about it one today and it looked. And it was just right there using the software. You could see it, and they were playing a file.
Because to me, I kind of understand why Apple's doing it, but no. I need it to do any video I have on my computer. I need it to be able to stream that to the TV, or
I agree.
I'm not interested.
And in fact, this is the exact reason why I was not wanting it, and I was thinking, well, what about like the Netgear one? Even though it doesn't have the beautiful iTunes interface, it's better in the sense that it will take anything and it works with your whole network.
Yeah, I mean, if I rip a DVD to my hard drive for whatever reason, which I'm not doing now because I don't have enough space, but I can see that happening in the future.
Yep.
Or if I download a legal BitTorrent,
download a legal copy of some BBC show that they've released,
or some AVI that I create or own or get from work or whatever,
or copious porn,
which really I don't need to see in HD necessarily.
I don't think any of us do.
But, you know, or Top Gear torrents, which frequently I rip off the net.
Yep.
I'm not quite as worried about admitting to that on mic.
Yep.
But, I love to watch Top Gear, and I would rather watch it on my TV than my laptop, but I'm not getting it through iTunes. So there's got to be a solution to that. Now, clearly there's hacks, and if the hacks do it just fine, then fine. I don't necessarily need a legitimate solution. I need a working solution.
Yeah, I agree. Something that is almost transparent. Might be a little funky, but basically transparent. That's what I need.
And apparently the setup for the Apple TV is great. Most people seem very pleased with it.
Yep.
The slideshow thing of looking at your photos. And now finally, because that has been a marketing selling point for a long time through a variety of things. Like on a Sony TV, if it's got a memory stick port, you can stick your photos from a memory stick into the TV and watch them on TV. And you're like, come on.
Yeah.
Who's going to do that? That is dumb. I'm not going to sit on my couch and watch my photos. No. Yep. But I will admit, if it's through iTunes or iPhoto or whatever, I can see doing that because it's so easy. It's a program I already use. I'm not going to do it every day, but if it's that easy to do, okay, fine.
Yep.
You know, it's something that I wouldn't put any effort into doing on my own because who cares? But so there's that. Listening to iTunes through the stereo setup, yeah, I can see doing that.
Oh, I totally could do that. That's the reason why I will get it for the most part, is partially for the content I download from iTunes and mostly for the podcast, just to listen. Like right now I take my iPod and I plug it into my stereo. But the only downside of that is controlling it. You got to walk over to it and use a little dial. It sounds stupid, but if I have an Apple TV, I can sit there and cycle through them in a much more convenient sense, you know, using the Apple TV software. I'd actually much prefer that.
And it'll be interesting to see how eventually that changes how I deal with music and podcasts. Right now, I never listen to podcasts on the stereo. It's always at work on an iPod or in my car on the iPod through the radio.
Yeah, same here, which I hate. Oh.
And I usually don't listen to the music at home.
Yeah.
Mainly because when I'm at home, music isn't playing. It's TV. You know, if we're at home and we're on the couch, we're watching TV, we're not listening to music. And if there's like house cleaning or music on in the background, it's like a CD into like a little small boombox.
Yeah.
Just because that's so much easier than turning on the living room stereo. And if you're not even in the living room, then you got to turn up loud to hear it. But
yeah, for me, every once in a while, I'll listen to the music.
If it's ease of use,
yep.
You know, okay. Because, you know, right now I have to plug the stereo into my laptop, which isn't a big deal. It's just I've got the 1/8-inch jack through the RCA to the stereo. You know, it's actually pretty easy, but the laptop has to be near the TV sitting on my TV shelf.
Yeah, I did that. That was my problem, was my laptop. It's like I just don't want to move it over there and do it. So I just use the iPod.
So, but the big, you know, and this is what everyone's talking about that knows what they're talking about, is the fact that suddenly podcasts, which include video podcasts, are now at the same level as TV shows and movies.
Exactly.
In the menu. What that means is they're just as accessible. So suddenly, you know, all these TWIM guys, This Week in Media guys, that have recognized this and what this means and are building up an arsenal, if you will, of 1080p video podcasts that you can download. And it's just as easy for you to watch that as it is for you to watch CSI.
Yep.
And granted, they're all doing podcasts about stuff. They're not pumping out fictionalized content yet, but it's going to happen.
Yep.
You know, and stuff that kind of blurs the lines, like Bar TV or Ask a Ninja, that has, it's not a bunch of guys talking about a subject. It's more of an entertainment thing.
Which I find both of those just as awful to watch.
I've watched one episode of Tiki Bar TV, didn't get it.
Didn't get it either. That, the French Maids TV, didn't get it.
But clearly,
that said, I like watching Cranky Geeks TV or Cranky Geeks, the video version each week, and it's, you know,
and
pretty low rep, but I treat it as a show.
This is, I mean, they've been talking about leveling the field for a long time with podcasts and other stuff. This legitimately levels the field.
Yep.
Now, there's still a few blocking hurdles that need to be overcome in terms of bandwidth. If you're serving a video podcast, you're still going to get hit with big bandwidth bills.
Yep.
Unless you know, I know there's solutions like Libsyn and Cashfly, and I don't really know how those work in terms of cost, but it is costing money.
Yeah.
And, you know, Leo will say every so often, if I had to pay for my bandwidth, if AOL wasn't paying for it, you know, it's like 40 terabytes a month.
Yeah.
It's obscene,
these
bandwidth costs. Now, a possible solution, you know, there is a persistent rumor that the next Apple OS, Leopard, will have a built-in BitTorrent client that will enable a lot of people to share the burden.
Yeah.
So if that would be brilliant. That is a way around it.
Yeah, but does would iTunes have BitTorrent downloading built
in? It sounds like it, yes.
See, and that would be cool. The only thing about that is, the thing I love about iTunes is, in general, you hit the refresh button and stuff's downloaded very shortly. BitTorrent client, it might be 2 days before you get it.
But, well, if it's... I mean, there's a bunch of different things going on. One, if you look at the reason Apple's not offering 1080p stuff through its store, 1080p movies, part of the issue is it would take forever to download.
Yeah.
If they get that through a torrent solution, you assume it would be quicker. Now,
well, but that, yeah, that
but,
has to be.
But Apple's whole thing is about UI and ease of use. If it's, I can't see them implementing a torrent solution if it degrades the iTunes experience.
Yeah, no, I can see them doing it for podcasting, but I can see the whole point to people buying something on there is they're not waiting forever. They're
right.
Waiting as long as their connection would
and
allow
that's,
it.
You know, if I want to watch a movie, I want to watch it now.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's, you know, I can see, you know, if the technology dictates getting into a different frame of mind where, okay, I'm going to start the CSI download so I can watch it tomorrow. You know, if that's just the way it's going to be, then I'm going to have to adapt. That's fine.
Yeah.
That being said, transitioning off of standard satellite anytime soon. But you, sir, you have divorced yourself from cable.
I have.
You have cut the cable.
I drove to the cable outlet.
As I rotate my head to the left,
turned my
your TV is gone. That's a separate thing because you have a projector.
Well, I have a video projector. But no, I gave my TV to my friend Mark because I hadn't turned that thing on in a year anyway. This big ass TV, which in one respect, I mean, I paid like $450 for it like 6 years ago. 36-inch TV. The thing must have weighed 150 pounds. Nice TV, but nowadays you can't even buy a TV like that. Literally, it was only worth $50 at the best. But no, I got rid of my cable converter, got rid of all cable. I have no TV whatsoever.
So anything you watch is going to be computer-based?
Yeah,
although
I have this antenna I put up for FM radio, and I'm going to put it back in my, either ceiling or in one of my closets so I can pick up maybe ABC, NBC, CBS if I want to. But no, basically everything I'm watching now,
you know,
is through iTunes.
There's a part of me that wants to take that step, but on the other hand, I really enjoy a lot of the random 500 channels. Like, you know, that new Planet Earth that they're putting on Discovery HD.
Yeah,
I don't know how to get that any other way than through standard cable or satellite.
I know. They need to start putting more of it out. I agree.
There needs to be a lot more content either available through iTunes or through official.
Well, the minute I did this, the first thing that I immediately realized is, okay, I want to see The Sopranos. So how am I going to do that? Probably go to my dad's, which is something I haven't done. And I like Real Time with Bill Maher. There's always a little bit of stuff. If I really boiled it down to look at it, I'm pretty much looking at three channels, though. I was looking at Comedy Central, I was looking at HBO, and I was looking at maybe NBC or CBS some of the time, or Discovery Channel, like five channels. And if I could have bought those five channels for $20 a month, but instead I was spending $90 a month for cable for something, for stuff that I just wasn't getting any value out of. So I just decided, and right now it's especially killing me because The Shield is coming on and I love The Shield, and maybe The Shield is something I'll buy. And I have to be careful not to spend just as much as I used to spend on cable, but The Shield, if it comes on iTunes as a season pass. But the one thing I did when I first dumped it is I went out and got a 16 episode multi-pass of The Daily Show, Colbert Show, and South Park, the current season. So I figure I'll get some good content, and the rest of it, I'm just so damn busy, I'm just doesn't even bother.
Yeah, it's there's not enough content available either through iTunes or through the web right now for me to take the leap. But
for me, you know, I'm you're talking about a person. There's times in my life when I spent virtually every waking minute in front of a TV, and there's times when I and I still have this weird skill of pretty much any movie that was filmed in the 80s, any movie, if you give me that movie and I watch like 10 seconds of any frame of that movie, I can tell you what the movie is, when it came out, who starred in it, even like an establishing shot, because I sat there and watched hundreds of movies over and over again on HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, Movie Channel, Stars, all those things, because we had cable and I just did nothing else. I didn't work. I was the laziest bum. I would sit there and watch TV. So to get off, and when my dad got TiVo, I mean, it was just constant. And to not be part of it is actually relatively significant, although I'm pretty much matching it with just listening to podcasts and the other download stuff, just different stuff, not as good and not some quality stuff, but still enough for me to happy. And also when I look at it, we're talking like a grand. If I don't replace it with anything, we're talking $1,000 a year I was spending on that. That's a lot of money for that. And right now I'm because with my new house payments, suddenly more than like 50% of my income is going to my house payment. And it's like, you know, $1,000 is suddenly, in the past it wasn't a big deal. Now it's like this huge deal. So anyway, hopefully I just won't match it with increased pizza purchase or whatever.
Clearly, you know, digital distribution is the wave of the future.
Yeah.
What that, you know, will it supplant everything else? I don't know. You know, one aspect of this, which I don't hear discussed a lot, is even if you're no matter how you're doing it, direct download or torrenting, internet traffic is going to go up.
Yeah.
And how are the ISPs going to deal with that? A couple months ago, there was a spate of stories about Comcast suddenly enforcing their bandwidth limits, saying, you know what, we give you six or eight gigabytes a month to download, and you've reached it, and we're shutting you off.
See, that's what scares me, because Comcast is an awful company.
I
got rid of my cable, but now I still have Comcast, you know, for my internet. And my biggest worry is I have Vonage for my phone service, and I hardly ever use it for that. But I've heard stories about them wanting to. They recognize what's VoIP signals and wanting to downgrade that in an effort for you to take their $40 a month service.
I would completely be unsurprised if they were really doing that. Not just conspiracy theory stuff. I would legitimately have no problem envisioning Comcast doing that.
I agree, and that's what scares me, because their service is entirely predicated on people too scared to go, some untested company. Let's go with Vonage let's go with Comcast for something that with Vonage would cost you $15 to $25 a month, and Comcast are charging $40 for the same stupid thing, exactly the same thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of disruptive technologies happening, but they all count on the net.
Yeah.
And so if the ISPs suddenly start screwing with you, it's going to be horrendous. You know, Verizon, which is who I get my DSL through, I haven't had any problem with them.
How much you pay a month for that?
Oh, it's bundled with the phone service. Oh, okay. So it's $70 a month for DSL and some big fat phone package.
And how fast is your DSL?
700. I'd have to do the speed test, but
six megabits,
600, I think. Whatever the, I honestly don't know.
Okay.
Let me put it that way. I think it's quote unquote standard DSL.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah, because theoretically my internet is about 10 times faster than that, but at a certain point it doesn't matter anyway, because it's all what people are serving you, and it's their speeds.
I unless I absolutely can't avoid it any other way, I don't want to subject myself to Comcast saying your bandwidth, you know, your downloads are reached this month.
Well, they've never done it to me, and I download an enormous amount, like with especially with like iTunes, it's constantly sucking stuff off. I mean, you know, hundreds every day.
Maybe you want to rephrase that.
What? Sucking stuff down? I didn't mean it to be crudely sexual. It's constantly vacuuming content from iTunes down there, because I subscribe to like 30, 40 podcasts and listen to some of them, don't listen to others.
I mean, that's a potential issue, and we'll see. There was something else I was just going to mention too, and I'm blanking on it. Whatever.
But anyway, so far, it mostly because I've been so damn busy, it's been a relatively uneventful week for me, as I don't have TV. I find myself not spending as much time in the living room, although I've got a giant screen TV and I've got 1,025 movies, of which 70 I haven't even watched yet, but I haven't even bothered watching them. So, you know, I've got some time before I'm going to start jonesing for TV, I guess.
Makes sense. It's, you know, and I try to not watch any new shows. I really, really try. But then, like, I see an ad for this new show on Fox Drive by one of the guys who was a Buffy / Firefly mm-hmm. producer, and it's got
the hell is
Nathan
Fox
Fillion
Drive?
As well, who was Captain Reynolds from Firefly. It's got him in it. And I'm
what
like,
is Fox Drive? Is that some new sci-fi?
No, it's
channel?
On Fox, and the show is called Drive.
Oh, okay.
And it's like it's. You have to, I don't know.
Oh, that's the, is that the Cannonball Run one?
You gotta drive across the country and you don't.
Yeah, that looked cool. That looks like a cool show.
Yeah, but I'm trying not to watch new shows.
I know, but
it's
it
like
did,
suddenly, like,
no, I agree,
two people from Firefly are involved and you're like, God dang it, I gotta support them.
Yeah, I was watching the
How
preview for that.
Is that?
I thought, wow, you know, there's not a lot of new premises, and I like that premise. It's basically an episodic drama, maybe comedy that takes place from this ongoing Cannonball Run event across the country. So, A, there's going to be a lot of cool car stuff in it, but B, it'll be also a lot. I mean, it just seemed like a kind of cool concept. In execution, it might suck, you know, but in execution, it might turn into Prison Break, but, you know, you never know.
Yeah, the other, I, you know, I'm kind of randomly reaching for topics. Battlestar Galactica had its season finale last week.
Mm-hmm.
A, wow.
Yep.
Because they certainly... do you care if I talk about what happened? Are you ever going to see it? Do you care?
Know. I read everything about it.
You know?
They're all Cylons, and they
well,
sing
hold on
all
there.
Along the Watchtower.
We're about
nobody's
to discuss
really
some
sure.
spoilers.
Sorry.
God, I can't believe you did that. What a dick move.
I'm sorry.
Four of the main characters are revealed as Cylons, and I went with it. And I'm yep. okay.
But are they really Cylons?
I read two interviews with Ron Moore, the executive producer, afterwards. Where
the
that
Starbuck isn't dead.
Yeah, that's that one's left a little fuzzier as to what's actually going on there. Although I think
you're talking
said
about a person who's never seen a single episode, but I've read so much about Battlestar Galactica that I feel as in the loop as I could possibly imagine to be.
So, A, well, I can't remember if he hands down said that, yes, Starbuck is alive, and she's not, like, I think he said that she wasn't a Cylon. And she's yep. not a Vision, so I don't know what else she could be, but...
She's a hologram, like in Red Dwarf. She got an H on her forehead?
No.
Okay.
But the other four characters, he has said, are Cylons. It's not a dream sequence. It's not a fake-out. They've decided that those four characters are Cylons. Just yep. end of story. Hmm. Now, they're a slightly different type. They're like a different model, so they don't necessarily function the way the existing ones are used to function.
Yep.
Which I thought was interesting. And the other thing, the question I was dying to know, and thank God was asked, how long have you known that these four characters were Cylons? And he said, basically, it happened during this season. And I thought, A, that's somewhat irritating.
You want a game plan from the beginning, or
I want
all...
him to know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
So that I feel it's very clever and put together, and it's not a whoops, I guess we got to do this.
Yeah, you know, I used to think the same way. I listened to the producer, Sir Now of 24, and he'd go, you know, you want us to plan it all out, have it carefully
right.
controlled for 24 episodes, because we're hardly doing it per episode. We're trying to figure out. I mean, we got this sort of plan. They have like 8 episode arcs that they try to come down on.
I think 24 is a little bit of a different case because it's so dense.
Yeah.
There's so much going on, and I yeah. totally understand that. Battlestar Galactica, I think, is a little, it's dense, but in a different way, where I yeah. think, you know, it's clear they've thought a bunch of things through ahead of time. And a lot of it's interwoven properly. And he said, you know what? I thought of it during the season. And the more we thought about it, the more it fit together well.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's saying, you know what? Ignore these other 50 things we've told you about and now just accept it. He's saying, you know, we think it fits in well. You know, so it's, you know, they've done a good job so far. I would be happier if he said it was our plan from the beginning to do it like this, because then I think they're more clever. But you're right. You need to improv. You need to adjust to what the audience is telling you. You need to adjust to what is clearly working now that you didn't think would work, or what you thought would be a great idea but isn't working.
That's what they tell you. It's like hard, because unless you're writing the whole thing, you're working with new writers each time that are getting into speed. You're realizing stuff that you had thought through. Characters don't even really work. They're saying it's so damn hard. Every once in a while you'll get like a BBC series that's like a 14 episode series that was clearly from every step of the way. But other than that, when you're an ongoing series, it's so hard to do it. some of these series is just peter out because they'll make choices that in retrospect are bad choices and they're sort of stuck with them.
And he has, you know, he has said, you know, the next season, the fourth season may be our last, or we may do a fifth. And he says, you know, I'm right now at the point of, you know, I know exactly what needs to happen. I know the next two quote unquote chapters. We just haven't hashed out whether, you know, whether we feel they should be lengthened to two seasons or we can get the job done in one.
Well, you know, it'll be a mistake if a year from now, you know, on one of the ships, I mean, on their station, Bobby Ewing steps out of a shower and says, "Hey, honey," or whatever.
Right.
So,
but the other thing of note is no new episodes until 2008.
Yeah, they made that big statement 2008, but actually
everyone knew it. I knew about.
That's not that. I mean, The Sopranos goes like a year and a half. We're talking like 7 months from now.
Yeah, The Sopranos, but.
Yeah, well, that's even worse. But there's no new till 2008. But you're talking about, if you're talking about January, you're talking about 7 months from now. It's not the worst thing in the world.
No, but it's frustrating because you know, they did a good job with a cliffhanger where I want to see what happens next right now.
Yeah, I hear you. And that was the thing. FX, I mean, The Shield had a great cliffhanger last year for The Shield, and I had basically forgotten about it until now. I'm reading like Heather Havrilisky and others, and I'm remembering, oh yeah, that was such a great storyline, and Forrest Whitaker, and I totally forgotten Forrest Whitaker was throughout the whole show and stuff. So anyway, it was, there is a danger if you go too long, you forget about it. I don't know if I told you last night, I downloaded on a whim, they released all the Star Trek original episodes on iTunes, both the very original ones and then their new spiffed up ones. And I downloaded the second pilot, you know, the there's the first famous pilot with the other guy,
the Cage, and then the Cage. So the second pilot you're talking about is Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Exactly. Okay. So I download that and I've never actually seen it before. And it was like weird to see because even then, first of all, Spock is freaking green in this thing. And I had no idea.
I have a little anecdote about that.
Okay. Well, let me in it just a second. But so I thought that was really weird. And then it was weird to see, oh my God, that's Sally Kellerman as in this show. And then there was no Uhura and George Takei's barely in it. But anyway, it was really interesting. But first of all, God dang, it looks fantastic to see them clean that thing up. It looks fantastic, and the areas where they spiffed it up were relatively easy to tell, but to their infinite credit, it just basically fits right in. It did not look at all overbearing, overwhelming. It certainly didn't look like the first time you saw Star Wars A New Hope and started seeing little crap running around the screen all over the thing and going, we're not supposed to notice that? I mean, your eyes are just drawn to this stuff. And here, in no way, shape, or form, like there was a, I don't know, there's just like a lot of little things that just,
well,
they just didn't do
it. Hear. Good. And I don't know if it's Paramount making that decision or if they... Are they delegated?
It was essentially there was clearly they redid like with computer graphics, did some Starship Enterprise stuff, but they made a conscious choice to mimic the kind of stilted camera swoops of that, and so it looked good in that sense. It looked good, and then they basically did really dense, beautiful Crab Nebula Galaxy kind of stuff, which was pretty obvious, but still looked good. And
cool.
And the other thing they clearly did was redid the sound, because at the beginning when they're going, you know, ooh, and then the Star Trek could go whoosh by the screen, it sounds better than it's ever sound before. And it's my understanding they also re-recorded all of the music using the original cues, and it sounds great.
The spaceship whooshing by in space.
So I know how stupid that is. So I'm debating. I probably might periodically download some more, because on an ongoing basis, I haven't watched Star Trek in 25 years.
I haven't watched it in a very long time either. The original series.
Yeah.
No, when they first started filming Star Trek, in fact, originally, Spock was supposed to be red-tinged instead of green, but someone at the network decided he looked too much like a devil.
I was going to say, he would look like a devil or a Mongol.
They wouldn't get Christian owners or Christian viewers, so they went with green. So they definitely filmed him with a green tinge. I think they put green makeup on him.
He definitely has green makeup on in this case.
Because Vulcans are supposed to have green blood, as a dork point.
Yep.
But apparently, they'd shoot a day, they'd send the film over to the processor, and the processor would think something was wrong, and they worked all night getting the green out of the film. And this went on for like, and Roddenberry, whoever, would get the film, get the dailies back and go, what the hell? He's not coming in green at all. Green up the makeup. Let's go. And this went on for, I guess, almost a week. It was like three or four days of Spock getting progressively greener and the tech at the lab going, oh my God, what are they doing wrong? And working all night to get the green out and do chemical processes to make him look. And it took like 3 or 4 days for them to communicate and say, no, no, he's supposed to be green.
Yeah.
Which I find that very funny.
The other thing that was interesting about it was it's clear sexual male-female dynamics was like paramount in this show in a way that stuff that they would just say or give people like little, like Kirk would give an aside to this woman or something. And honest to God, I don't know what it's supposed to mean nowadays. I mean, it was clearly like this visual shorthand that was common at the time, but nowadays is so antiquated that it looks ridiculous. There's this one gal at the very beginning that they're on the deck of the Starship Enterprise and she's standing behind Kirk. And then at one point he gets up moving. She stands in his place and just stands there. And then like a 5 minute talking scene, then he comes back to where she is. And then she moves out of the way. It's like, it was so weird. It's like she has no purpose whatsoever. But then at one point they look at each other, give each other an aside, and it's clearly supposed to mean something. And I have no idea what it was supposed to mean. It was just bizarre. But anyway, it was kind of cool to see. And I think I might, if I'm bored, download some more. They're $2 each and on an ongoing basis. Since I have no TV, it might be fun to watch all of those. So I liked it. And I especially liked how cleaned up it was. It's weird to think, boy, I'm watching Star Trek clearly better than anybody ever else saw it prior to us seeing it now. I mean, it's always been grainy, screwed up on a bad TV or whatever. It's kind of exciting.
So do you have a VGA cable or something you plug into the laptop that routes into the projector?
No, for what? To watch what?
To watch stuff off your laptop.
Oh, no, I watch it either on my iPod or I watch it on the laptop. Like what I was talking about last night, I just watch it on the laptop. I put the screen up in the corner and watch that way, or I just do full screen.
Okay.
So, because my laptop's 17-inch and I'm that close to it, it's the equivalent of a big screen TV.
Yeah, but if you have a projector.
Yeah, if I did, I would just put, I just run a VGA cable, but it's not. But I want my laptop to be next to me, but no, I could easily do it. It would be no problem.
All right, so my please stop this week is a little silly. Please stop not giving me an HDMI cable on my 360. Please stop not making that adapter cable.
Do you think that'll help?
No.
You're hopeful, though.
Just make it happen.
I had a please stop, and I cannot for life me remember what it was. I actually thought of it last week, and I'm kind of lost. Okay. Sorry.
So we did get some email. But we addressed it already.
Cool.
So
what is that email address again?
Why? Thanks for that setup. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. And if you write us with a question or a comment, we will perhaps address it on the podcast.
Possibly, if we're so inclined.
All righty then. That's it. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
Thanks for listening.